Hey, what is up, you amazing soul warriors? Welcome to this Healing Messages of the Week with me, your friend, your pal, Reverend LC. I'm grateful to be here. Sorry about last week. We wanted to start this 10-part series for, we're going to take apart every year of my recovery. I want to talk to you about the lessons and the blessings. And for the intention of extracting the wisdom and how important it is to build a foundation in recovery. And if you are in new recovery or you know somebody that's in new recovery, share this video with them in the hopes just that sometimes we just know that we need to know that we're on the right path, that it's supposed to be hard in some ways, and possibly some nuggets in here that could make maybe that little less white knuckling and more productive part of recovery. And so I want to share some things with you that come from my experience that are, you know, some of the things that are embarrassing, that hurt, that were amazing, catastrophic, and at the same time triumphant. It is because of all that happened in year one and leading into year two that I can sit here and be in year 10, going to celebrate 11 years coming up. This is the first time since I began my journey, my recovery journey, that I've actually honestly forgotten the exact day or date that I stepped into this journey. And we may talk about that a little bit more. That might come along as we get moved through the 10 parts in one of the later years where that became a little less monumental to me, and what happened and the foundation that I built throughout became the most important to me and how it serves my life today. And again, I hope that it can resonate with you, and I hope that it'll resonate with you no matter what year or stage or phase of recovery you're in. We are in a very dangerous time for people where addictions are taking over our lives more and more and more, and yet in substance areas, the substances are getting more dangerous every single solitary day. And it's been hurting my heart to watch this new trend of, I guess, what is called trank or whatever, that just shows a soulless vessel, a hurting vessel. For every person that I witness or see this substance take hold of, I can just see and feel their pain. And so I was inspired to do this 10-part series just out of a feeling of, how else can I serve? How else can I make an offering that may help, you know, even just one person in their journey? Because I don't like to see human beings suffering this way. And so that's the point of all this. That's why I'm going to do all this. I want to start real quick with some resources that I believe are just super amazing, and some people I just want to give a shout out to while we build our room up and we build our feet up. And again, if this content resonates with you, or you find solace here or purpose here or any of those things, then feel free to share this video out. I appreciate your support. We do everything organic at this stage of this game, so we don't do ads. I don't pay for boosts. I have no judgment about that, you know, however it goes, but this is just what's authentic to me. So we grow this very organically, and you are a huge part of that. You can also help us continue to go and grow by becoming a monthly or monetary supporter. You can go to anchor.fm/recoverysoulfood, and you can click the support this podcast button. You can support us by leaving a 5-star review on all of your major podcast platforms, and you can subscribe our YouTube channel, like the video, make sure that you comment, be active in the chat. Your energy feeds my energy, and we really start getting some real stuff, because it's one thing to sit here and talk about something. It's a whole nother vibe and energy, and we draw more out of each other's experience when we are able to discuss back and forth in the chat. So we're live on 2, 4, 6, 8 platforms at once, 2 on Twitter, 3 on Facebook, and 2 on YouTube, actually 4 on Facebook. So wherever you are, welcome. Thank you for the support. And I will do my best to keep up with the chats and stay in it, engage your energy. So first resource we have tonight, as always, my beautiful soul sister and friend, Pamela Topjian, who has so much to offer and I'm trying to find her stuff. She's got an amazing book called I Didn't Come This Far to Only Come This Far. This is a great resource, an amazing inspiration. She's a beautiful inspiration to me, one of the greatest people I know on earth. She has also written this new book called Behind the Mask, Gloves, and Scrubs, One Nurse's Journey, where she talks about her experience in the medical field and how much courage it takes to almost turn your back on what is not authentic to you, even though that was the program and the plan that was given to us. It's also very important to be able to be grateful for the places we've been, even if we are no longer in alignment with that. So you can pick both of these amazing resources up, which Pamela has made super affordable for everybody, on Amazon.com/PamelaTopchian. You can utilize, and thank you that a few of you did utilize this great guided visualization that Pamela also has on her amazing YouTube channel, which is youtube.com/@PamelaTopchian. This guided visualization is for to help relieve craving. So if you're in year one, if you're in year 50, utilize everything possible to make your walk a bit easier. One thing that I started learning, I'm telling you, is how to hack my own biology, how to hack my own brain, how to, instead of being caught in a shame loop, to actually take apart my own experiences, and become aware of the ways and the patterns in which I think, and to be able to work with that to create a successful program for myself. So utilize that guided visualization. You can do that on Pamela's YouTube channel. All right. Next resource that I love to share with you about is one of my favorite, you know, little resources I've received this year. That is Martin John Garcia's interpretation and his wisdom lent to the Tao Te Ching. This is a great pocket-sized resource of which you can, you know, pick for the way I use it as a devotional. I pick a number between 1 and 81 every day, and I get to read along with Martin John's wisdom and what the Tao Te Ching has said, one of the most ancient texts on earth. You guys know I utilize everything that is in resonance with me. Give it a try. If it resonates with you, then it's an amazing resource. I love him. You can get that on Martin John's website at www.martinjohn.com. Pick up your copy today. It's amazing. Also, before we end this video, in the chat, I want you to pick a number between 1 and 81. I will randomly pick one of those numbers, whatever jumps out at me through what I see, or we may do a couple of them. We just move along with it, and we'll read one of those before we end the video. So there you go, Martin John. Next, I'm proud of this man. I'm super proud of our friend, Matty Jablonski, The Point of Change. He has written and published his Poetry of Change. I'm so just proud of this guy. You know we love The Point of Change. We love Matty Jablonski. This kid helped change my life. He's part of the reason that I stand here and continued to utilize myself and give my service in this way, because you never understand. Sometimes you can be so ready to give up on what seems like what you feel like is your purpose when somebody comes along and lets you know, hey, what you said changed my life. And that was Matty, and he's my little brother from another mother, and I love this guy. So pick up the Poetry of Change book on Amazon.com/Poetry of Change. All right, we're going to get into year one. This is from, my story is from hell to healing. And year one is going to consist of one topic, and that is the storms of change. So if you guys are ready to go, I'm ready. Let's go. Thank you. up, beautiful souls? Welcome, Michael. Thanks for being here. Welcome, Pamela. Grateful you guys are watching on YouTube. Thank you so much. Thank you, Lisa Sandling. Yeah, last week we were supposed to start this, and right at the last minute, man, some weather came up, bad storms, so bad that we didn't get out of it for a while. And I thought, how fitting, man, when I think about the energy of how I went into year one, it was nothing but the storms of change. Because listen, change is unnerving, even when we're in the midst of this active substance addiction. I mean, I was crawling the floor in that relapse. I mean, I was at one of the lowest parts of my entire life when I came to the awareness and the realization leading up to this year one start that I couldn't do this anymore. I couldn't live like this anymore. If you want to know more about my story, there is a video entitled From Hell to Healing, my addiction recovery story, that it's on my YouTube channel. I ask that you check that out to kind of know more of the history. But leading up, the thing I knew that I was the most good at on earth, and trust me when I use the word good, it's not in a positive sense, but the only thing that I knew how to be super, super well was absolutely screwed up. Absolutely, I was the best drug addict there was to be. You know, it just seemed like that was the only talent. And it was very interesting in how I truly thought about myself. Because I think when we put substance in our body, when we do something so absolute dangerous, when we stare death in the face in order to numb the pain that it is that we carry inside, that's pretty severe. That's pretty serious. And you don't love yourself when you're willing to put poison in your body to escape the poison that's in your heart. And so that's where I was when I stepped into year one. I had a son that was right in his teenage years, and I knew that no matter what was happening, he was absorbing and he was going to be taking his cues on how he was going to deal with his pain and stuff in his life by the way I was dealing with mine. And so I utilized him and his energy and my need for him not to handle his own life in this way. I used that as motivation to begin to make a change in my life. And plus, I was tired of living to die. You know, that was basically the energy I came into year one with, was I was down to a decision. Either I'm going to figure this thing out and make a new life for myself and my family, or I'm just going to give all up and give in. And I had been trying to die for the majority of my life up until this point. And so year one begins where it starts out homeless. I'm homeless, angry, bitter. I have no forgiveness. I have no concept of forgiveness. I'm still under living under the concept, the lie that forgiveness equals letting someone else off the hook. There was so much wrapped up in my mind. And year one's going to be one where we're working through our mind and our perceptions, because for me, that's really where it starts. You know, if we talk about a mind, body, kind of spirit table, an instruction guide, I guess, if we're looking at mind, body, and spirit, then I know that I was starting in my mind. I had this really weird and strange awareness that in order for this time in treatment to be different, I was going to have to really look at what it was that continuously led me back down the road of overwhelm and relapse. And it ended up being my head and my heart. So I knew very early that those were the things that were going to have to change. So I started out in this, I was absolutely homeless and needing, we weren't sleeping outside, but we were living with family, and it was not a situation where it was a very welcoming energy to be in. It was very, very, very stressful because we knew we were not really wanted there, that we were only there because we had no choice, and that, you know, I think that even those that we were living with, you know, had they been able to, you know, there were, you know, they knew that. So we were there, and it was very stressful on all of us, me and my wife and my son. And I knew that this was different. I knew that I was going to get into treatment, that I was into treatment, and I was going to do something different. I just had no earthly idea how to start. I just started with what I knew. Okay, what is the thing that normally drives me back? All right, so my body, within 3 days, no matter how much my mind wants to stop, no matter how much my mind wants to quit, no matter how much my mind knows that I want things to be different and I can make all these plans, I know that within 3 days of withdrawal, my body is going to trump my mind and we're going to go out and use just to make the pain stop. So I needed to go into MAT. Some of you are going to be able to have heard this story many times. I apologize, but it's necessary. So I knew I had to go back into MAT, and I made medication-assisted treatment for those that do not know. I had to make some non-negotiables with myself. I knew I just knew that this was the changing, defining moment, that I was done. I was done living that life. I was done feeling that way. I was done being immersed in this pain that I never could stop staring at. And so I was willing to do what it took to set myself up for some sort of recovery success. And the only way I could do that was because of how many times I'd failed in the past. And so here I go into treatment with some non-negotiables. Okay, I'm only going to go to a milligram of medication that is just enough to keep my body from trumping my plans, to keep my body, because when we first start in recovery, we're not strong on the recovery end. You know, we're very much still married to the coping mechanism, which is the substance. We found what works. We found what numbs the pain. It's very hard to say, okay, give that up. And yet we don't have anything else to kind of replace that behavior or heal that pain with. So it's a very hard transition. And I think that self-grace is going to be a big key here. But so I had studied all of those failures. I knew that there were some things I had to do. So I went to a very strict program, one with severe, severe accountability, meaning like a three strikes, you're kind of out deal. And it sounds harsh, but it was super helpful, because without that accountability, would have fallen into the patterns of which I had lived the majority of my life. And I would have pushed those boundaries. And the moment that I would have known that I could get by with a whole bunch, that program would have been ineffective to me, and I may not be sitting here now. So I chose a program that was very, very strict, had high accountability. My next goal was to, okay, I got to figure out how to get us into a place to live, because our environment, and please hear me well, our environment holds a lot of substance when it comes to change. When it comes to us wanting to make positive changes in our lives, you better look at your environment, because trying to make a positive change in your life while living engulfed and surrounded within a negative environment is, you're going to be running in place. And I felt that that was the case, that I was just running in place, and that each day I was kind of almost canceling out where I was trying to change. So I knew that focus had to be the environment. And my family needed a home. We needed a place to be together so that we could heal. And because we were all going through our own things. My wife was in the relapse with me. Our son was going through massive amounts of stress that was affecting his health. And that's what we had to do. So in 3 months of, you know, into my recovery journey, we get involved in this housing program. And all of a sudden now we're moving into this apartment where adulting is taking front and center stage for the first real time in my life. You guys have to get this background. You have to understand that I had never been a responsible person. The only thing I was ever truly, truly responsible for is, how am I going to stay well today? How am I going to get well today? It was always just fighting through life. And I was so tired of the fight. I was tired of just fighting through my life day to day, because nothing ever seemed to really work out for me. If an opportunity was presented, there would unconsciously come this self-sabotage that, you know, somehow I would just find myself ruining it and not even truly understand why. And so I'd never adulted. And so now all of a sudden we're in this apartment, in this apartment complex that is part of this MAT program, and we are surrounded by other people kind of going through the same thing, but yet they were not in the space where they were at the end of their addiction journey, their substance addiction journey. And so we go from this one stressful environment to a new, very stressful environment, surrounded by a bunch of people in new recovery, and not everybody was as committed as I felt like I was. So now we're in a whole different type of negative environment. And there was a lot going on in my mind. I guess I should back up a little bit before we get to this apartment. When we first signed up for treatment, this story also starts with a newspaper article. There, on the day that we went and signed up for this particular program, there was a sign that said, "If you would like to tell your story," this is at the very brink and base of what they deemed the opioid crisis in, I guess, oh gosh, what was it? 2016 or something like that. 2017. I don't know. I don't remember exactly the year, but they were calling for people to tell their story. And to do that, you ended up getting some type of gift card for something. And at the time, we're coming to new recovery. Most of us come in broke as a joke, sick, busted, and disgusted. And I truly was too. And so that resource was what had me respond to this article. The man was super nice and began to listen to my story and got super, like, okay, wait a minute, we got to do a little bit more with this. And he started to write this story with me. And he came out to the house that we were staying at the time. And he says, "Well, we got to have some pictures for the story." Because all of a sudden, this story had gone from a small little part of a bunch of stories put together. And this became a front page, biggest newspaper of our area story. And so I'm feeling pretty good thinking, okay, maybe this will help somebody. And at the same time, I needed that resource. And so I really just blindly trusted this man that it was going to be what we had discussed. Fast forward, this article comes out, and on the front page, he had us simulate. In this picture for this article, he had us simulate my wife giving me a shot in the way that we did whenever we were using. And so he promised me, "Nobody's going to know who you are. It's going to be very anonymous. We've changed your name. We've done all of that stuff. We've got a great photographer. Nobody will ever know it's you." And when this article came out, y'all, it was very clearly on the front page of the news. The photo took up the entire almost front page, and it was the back of my head. You can see my wife's hands. You can see, the picture, the rig right here. And this article is written as though it is in present time of using. And at the time, I had a pretty great job. One that I enjoyed doing, something different every day. It was a pretty good opportunity. And here's where this whole subconscious self-sabotage comes in. All of a sudden, this article's everywhere. I'm super embarrassed. I don't, the only thing I don't want is my family to read it, because I have such a history that my family would read that article and believe that it was happening in real time. And so there was just so much stress. And now this article's out. I'm devastated. I lose basically everything. Job gone, income's gone. Now we're moving into this new apartment in this atmosphere of everybody's using. And I felt like this one lone wolf in all of this. And my wife was really real shaky, because she came into recovery because I was leading us into recovery. She had followed me into addiction, and now I was trying to lead us all out of that darkness and help us grow into a different light for ourselves and our family. And the honest truth is, she wasn't as ready as I was. And so I knew that this was a bad environment as well. I knew this was going to be a tough environment for her. I already kind of had this. I had had that click in place where it was just like, I can't continue to do this. It's not fun anymore. I'm too old for this. I'm tired of the grind. I'm tired of all of that. And so we're in this. And now all of a sudden we've got to pay bills. Now all of a sudden there's stuff coming every month. And I'm trying to figure this out. With no job, no source of income. And I wasn't really sure that I had any skills, in all honesty, to go out and be able to begin to cultivate money. And so it was such a stressful time. And it just seemed like there were no resources that were available for people in medication-assisted treatment. That it was still very frowned upon, very shunned in a lot of the rooms, in a lot of the programs. And I just felt like I was by myself. And I had no one to guide me or help me. And I just really didn't know what to do other than just grit through it. So as you can imagine, I was this very angry, loose cannon addict without my substance. And I was just trying to stomp and push my way through this very drastic time in our lives. Now, meanwhile, I'm still doing this work, taking apart my failures, and I'm trying to do this work on my mind. I had discovered this 12 Laws of the Universe video by Dr. Bob Proctor, who I'd seen in the movie The Secret a few years ago, and I just resonated with it as it started talking, naming out the laws of the universe and how much they made sense to me and how I was operating. It was the first time that I actually heard and I guess received the idea that my thoughts really, really, really influence my experience. That I didn't realize that I had any control over my own thoughts or my own experience. I was under the belief system that I had to play the hand I was dealt. You know, this is the shitty hand of cards life has dealt me. I'm such a, I was victim. And it wasn't to say that I had not been victimized in my life, but there's a difference between being victimized and experiencing trauma and living life from the perspective of a constant victim. And I see that trait run through the substance addiction community. We often feel like the world has turned against us or that we have been beat down from start to present. And, you know, I did not realize until year one when I started doing a lot of work on my mind, really changing my thoughts and changing my perceptions, that I did not realize how much power I truly held in that time. And my mindset and all of that was still closely tied to that active using community as well, because it seems like in year one, we listen to the cliche and the sayings of change your people, places, and things. We listen to that, but there's this very real resistance within us because we almost feel like we don't want to leave people behind, that we have people in our lives that are going to tell, you know, they're telling us, well, you're a sellout. You're not like us, or you're just going to leave us behind, and so many things. And so we really deal with this internal, what I now know to be these trauma bonds with people. And we have to leave these friendships and these comfort places and people that we know in order to create something different. So we're dealing with so many emotions and so much change in year one, that it can be really, really overwhelming. And I'll tell you the truth, guys, I was completely overwhelmed. I had no choice but to keep our home because we had nowhere else to go and we couldn't go back where we had just come from. We were out of options. And the thought of having to have our child sleep in our vehicle, you know, was just more than I could stand. And it motivated me to just get out there and try. And of course, I was still in hustle mode because that's what you do when you're out there is you're in hustle mode. So a lot of year one drug with it a lot of the behaviors and the thought processes, the speaking patterns and the ways and means and the values and morals of active addiction. And that was coming through year one. So there was so much resistance happening within me, the want to change, the comfort of what I knew and how I could provide and the things that I understood that helped keep us going, but with a drastic difference of this feeling of guilt and shame of, I don't want to continue to operate in this way. As I've been going through to try to do this series, I've been really thinking about these years and taking them apart. And it's just amazing how many different changes that me and my family went through just within that first year. To try to put them all together, this video would take far too long, because we packed so much life and change into a year. Because even though my wife and I were going to the same program together, it was quickly evident to me that she was not in the same place that I was. She had not had 20 years of hellish addiction behind her, that she was still fairly new to the opioid game, and it was really, really serving a purpose for her. And so trying to be on this program and trying to follow me into this new life that I knew had to be built from within proved to be too much for her. And so whenever you're surrounded by every temptation there is possible, while you're trying to do something that you really don't really want to do at the time, eventually something's going to break, and the bow did break. And she was kicked out of the recovery program and very quickly was in a relapse. And so while trying to hide it from me and, of course, our son, while trying to hide it from us, it was very evident to me that something else was going on. And there was a lot too many available opportunities to make that relapse so. And so now, all of a sudden, I feel like I am drowning in this life, and I'm angry. I'm angry at recovery. I'm angry at God. I'm angry at life, because I think, here I am trying. It's so egoic. It's hard for me to even say without listening and going, damn, man, you kind of sound like an asshole. But this is the way it is. But I could not believe that here I am doing all of this work to change my life and better life for me and for my family. I was just drowning. Nothing was happening easy. There was nothing in my life that was easy at this point. And I just remember thinking, man, God's got jokes. So now my number one human, my best friend in the world, my wife, my running buddy, the person who I had always shielded and protected from doing any kind of scoring or being out there by herself. You know, I was not one of those guys that was able to send my girl. I just couldn't do that. So I always tried to shield her. Now I knew I was going to have to make a real decision. I was going to have to decide whether I could let her go and do and be on her own in this relapse, or else was I going to follow behind her to keep her safe. And I was so dedicated to finding out what the best possible version of my life looked like, because that was a decision that came in that moment. Was like, I've seen the worst of my life. I've seen the worst possible version of me and my life. Now I want to see the best, and I'll do what it takes to get there. Now I had to make a decision between this big thing that I knew was in complete and total alignment with my soul and protecting the person that I just love the most in this world, the person I had chosen to spend my life with. And we had been one of those strange couples that spent all of our time together. We did not have a lot, whole lot of outside friends or get to, things like that. We were together most of the time. We like to call it, the official title for it is codependent, because we very much were. But so I felt like I was just in this real shit show of having to make this drastic choice of how do I protect her? And so every day there was this theme of what if something bad happens? And so my mind was really, really attacking itself within this entire first year. I'm having to run a household for the first time basically by myself when I have no skills to do so. I'm trying my best to be a good example and not a hypocrite for my son, who was very much absorbing what was happening and experiencing his own stress. I was trying to create this foundation for us, and I just felt like the very people that I was trying to change life for just seemed like it was fighting against me. And what I start to realize about year one as I look back on it is this was the place where the foundations for all of who I am today were built and born, and they were built in the struggle. They were built because often we can't become aware of how we want our lives to be or how we want it to look if we don't first understand what we don't want. And I was going through just hit after hit after hit of how I did not want my life to continue to be. And so sometimes in that first year, we the lie that if you just stop using, everything will be okay and life will fall into place, and we're not supposed to, have these hard things happen or these hard issues. We feel like somehow when we get ready to make a change, that life is supposed to just roll out the red carpet for us, and we're not supposed to experience all of the energy that we've already set in place. Now, luckily, this is another way that I know that this was divine timing for me, and I was in the purpose of where I was supposed to be, is that I was aware for some reason at this point, and never before, but at this point, I was aware that I had put a lot of karma out and that I had to exact that karma back, that I had to accept what was being given to me and be aware that I had put that stuff out. And so I had this karma checklist in my mind where every time something big would come in, I'd be like, okay, I gotta go through this. I'm gonna learn from this. I'm gonna utilize this, and I'm just gonna keep moving forward. And I'm gonna start checking this karma off of my karma list. And so, for my wife to be in a relapse, there was a very real part of me that leaned into the experience because I knew that I had put my family, especially my grandparents, I had put my grandparents through this very same thing, and I knew there was a value in this experience. Little did I know that this relapse of hers would last for 2 years and we would really go through a lot coming up. But I just knew that I had to go through this, and I really let myself feel what it was like to be the other people in my life, because we have this tendency as people in an active addictive state to believe that the person we're hurting the most is ourselves. And it's very easy not to recognize how our addictions are affecting those around us. And I was just inherently aware of that and absorbed that, was able to really just kind of lean in and feel what it must have been like for other people in my life to witness this, to experience it, and to be involved in it. So even though I was angry that, somehow my wife would abandon me in this whole recovery journey and go back out, It sounds so, I'm telling you, it sounds really selfish to say because there is so much self-centeredness. Addiction is a form of selfishness. I said it. I don't know how it's going to land, but it's a very real form of selfishness. Because when we are so engulfed in this act of addiction, this coping mechanism to numb, we are numbing ourselves at all cost, forgetting how it's affecting anybody else. We will do what it takes to be done. Now, we see this in everyday life and, you know, the crime that happens and all those things. We will do what it takes to numb our pain. And so that's where I was. I was very, very angry. Very angry. I had no skills on how to regulate my emotions. I had never possessed emotional regulation skills. I would go from zero to angry all the time. So I was either drastically hurting or extremely angry. There was no in between. The fun or the laughter that I would have always still had this dark, you know, this dark lining around it. And it was never true joy. And so being so angry and wrapped up in that first year, I'm still surprised to this day, especially thinking about doing these series, really surprised that I can even call myself still here. As many times as I wanted to give in, and yet the purpose stood firm, and it became more than I was willing to lose. I think that's a real key factor in early recovery, is trying to build something where you have something that is just too much to lose. There is a true, it's so important to have some type of purpose bigger than you. People say, well, you got to recover for yourself. You can't do it for anybody else. Ultimately, that is true. But let me tell you, if you're drowning and someone throws a life preserver that says, your kids, or a life preserver that says, you know, something else. Don't just drown and not take the opportunity. Take the opportunity. You will build into loving yourself enough to at some point fulfill that recovering for yourself or doing it for yourself. But in the meantime, do whatever it takes to get it done. I don't care what the concept is. My son was very important to me. I could focus in on him. Me putting myself in the situation of having to be a person that watched him deal and cope with his own life and his problems in the way in which I was dealing with became far more hurtful to me to think about than for me to go through the hurt and heartache of recovering. So that's what I utilized. I let my purpose of changing and not being a hypocrite for him pull me through every single time I wanted to just give in, just once, just once. And I'll tell you, it wasn't perfect. Year one wasn't perfect. There were times that I absolutely did more extracurricular numbing through other different substances or different activities that was still very real to my addiction. It was very indicative of the pain and the place that I was. But we have to be able to give ourselves some type of grace. There's no way you're coming from, for me, I had been in addiction for 22 years. I had lived at the bottom of what was possible for any human being. So there's no way that I'm going to make a valuable decision, step into recovery, and it's going to look perfect. And there is a very real value in being able to give yourself grace to grow. If you don't give yourself the grace to grow, you're going to stay in pure judgment of yourself, and the shame loop will continue to swirl you right down the toilet. And in this day and age, we may or may not get you back to give it a different try. So if the grace to grow is so necessary in your early recovery, it is still just as necessary in your later recovery as well. Here's the thing. We're always going to be growing. That is the nature of life. It's how the universe works. And if we don't understand and give ourselves the ability to do that with compassion, then we won't make it. And if we do, that's what causes a lot of that whole white knuckling thing. That white knuckling, that barely getting by. We have to at some point just get tired of the struggle. Because there's a difference in the struggle and the fight. When you're fighting for better, doesn't that even feel more expanding and positive than struggling, you know, like just struggling to make it through? That feels so contractive. And so in year one of the biggest things I started utilizing is changing the way that I spoke and changing the thoughts that I had surrounding myself and the whole process. I'm probably a bit harder on myself today than I was then when it comes to certain things, because it's not until you know better that you can do better. And I utilized every resource that possibly was available to me. And I found so much greatness in things that had nothing to do with substance addiction, that had nothing to do with addiction language. I read things about the mind. I read things about the brain. I started learning about how the brain actually operates. And it's very interesting. It gave me the ability to see that I wasn't just a fuck up, that there were actual processes in my brain that had been trained there that were stepping to the forefront and running certain things. And I had to, it took understanding that to be able to honestly lend the grace to grow. And so I utilized everything. I created my own recovery program. I did not trust my program to fix me. I trusted them to guide me. But if something did not feel right within my soul, after giving it a chance or their suggestion a chance, if it didn't work, I didn't just keep doing it. I moved away and moved on to something else. And so I was desperate for my recovery, and I fought through creating the resources that were feeding me and my soul. And I think that it is very valuable for people to know that they can reach outside of the spectrum of what is recovery and create a program that's going to change them in every aspect from the inside out. And that's why I'm really looking forward to getting to year three in this series, because in year three, some expansion happens that really, really opened the door to who I can become. And it also made years one, two, and three make a lot of sense. But in year one, I just started with the basics and started learning about myself. I started becoming aware of the internal shame loops that just continued to tell me what a shitbag I was. I started stopping those dead in their tracks. I started doing something very physical and jarring so that I would interrupt those thought processes. And I wouldn't just try to change them with something that wasn't true. If I thought I was a piece of shit, I didn't start by saying, I'm the greatest person on earth. I didn't say things that were not true to my soul. But I just started becoming aware of how many times I was actually thinking from that place. From that place of self-loathing. From that place of failure. From that place of regret. One thing that in this time, and this, okay, so this is also where a lot of my values were born as well, where one of the big things that I always had within me was regret. Always regretted the places that I tried to do things and failed, because that's what I was told I was supposed to do. You know, where I tried and failed to go and complete college, I took that on myself as a failure, never understanding that college, it just wasn't for me. That wasn't what was for me. That I was probably never going to be happy in a situation where that was what I needed to drive myself. But I had no idea that the dream that was being laid out to me by other people was just not going to be for me. I didn't know to give myself that forgiveness. So it was this constant state of regret. And so in this time where I talked about earlier, where I'm seeing what I don't want for my life, in order to start to create what it is I do want, my values were born in that I refused to be a hypocrite. So I wasn't going to tell my son not to do something that I was doing. If I didn't want him to be an angry mess, I was going to have to start working on my own anger. If I wanted him to see what it meant to love and nurture and take care of a family, I had to try to do that for myself. I would not be a hypocrite. And my other thing is, I wanted zero regrets. I made it a point every single day when I woke up in every way to have zero regrets for that day. I just wanted to understand what it meant to lay my head down at night and not have one single regret on, did I lie to somebody today? Did I take advantage of somebody today? Did I have to do something that went against me and my soul today? I had never laid my head down in peace until I stepped into this year one of recovery. And when we talk about year one, expect that there will be storms of change. Expect that things are going to come to you that you've already been putting out. It's the nature of the game. It's the nature of energy. What is set in motion has to make its circle. It has to come back. And so we have to start checking those things off. And depending on how long you've been out there setting up this karma in your life. But the good news is that as you're checking off your karmic list, you can start to create new karma for yourself. And as you do that, every time you make a different decision, you set up a new energy. You set up new karma. You set new things in motion. And I know for a lot of us in the world right now, we're kind of looking back over this time and we're going, yeah, okay, so when is this new karma going to come around? But I promise you, it's coming around every single day. Every time you don't fall into this egoic victim mentality, every time you don't give in to that, you are experiencing the blessings of new karma. You're experiencing and you're catching glimpses of the new you that you are in absolute process of creating. And no matter where you are in this journey, I promise you, just keep going. Just keep growing. Give yourself the most grace possible. However you would treat someone you truly love, just picture watching someone that you truly, truly love going through the exact same things you're going through now. Would you treat them differently? Treat yourself with the same compassion that you would treat somebody else with. It's highly valuable. We are so harsh on ourselves. And if you don't know truly, if you're not aware of how you interact with yourself, then start to become aware of how you interact with others. Because we treat others ultimately the way we treat ourselves. So if you live in judgment, if you're very hard on others, the people that you love or whoever, if you're very hard on others, it's a very good indication of that's how you are on yourself. And there is something very real about the forgiveness, which we'll talk about in year two. Year two comes with recognizing and understanding what forgiveness is. Year one, we're just kind of trying to battle and balance our body, and we're trying to change our mind. And it's going to be very real that the likelihood is that you're going to step into a lot of responsibility, because that's just life. And that's what we have to do, you know. And this is a whole different world than even it was 10 years ago. You know, we have housing shortages. People are going through very real, real struggles. And so I don't want to say any of this like this is just the easiest thing you can do and you can change your life. But we have to begin somewhere. And I hope that you take the opportunity to begin today, wherever you are. It doesn't matter how many years you have clean and sober, which is, I hate that. I hate that whole statement, but I'm using it for the sake of that's the language people understand. It doesn't matter how many years you have clean and sober. If nothing in here and nothing in here ever changes, then nothing out here ever will either. And I refuse to this day, refuse to be some dry addict without my drugs. I'm not going to be some bitter old guy who just moves through life in the same manner that I would just without my coping mechanism. That's not sustainable. So true change and true healing is absolutely being born right now in the midst of whatever struggle that you're going through. And the struggles are real. And the lessons and the wisdom and the foundations that are being built within them are so valid and so real as well. So wherever you are, please keep going and growing. I promise you that you bring some good stuff out. I promise you there's so many blessings that happen in that year one, in learning about myself, in giving myself that grace, in being able to experience what it was that my family had experienced by being the family member of someone in addiction. And all of it sounds negative, and I hope that I haven't painted a super negative picture of it all. I just want you to know that the struggle is natural. The struggle is to be expected, and the struggle is leading you somewhere. And hopefully what it's leading you to is the grace to grow. Awesome. All right, let me see some comments because I haven't seen. Let's see. Thank you, Pamela, to share like this. Sometimes I feel like it doesn't really make sense when I kind of share like this because I'll have something put together, but I never actually, like, I guess I need to write this stuff down because when it comes time and I push the live button, sometimes it doesn't come out the way that I had originally hoped that it would. But that's why I ask for everybody's energy to come in because I do a lot of prayer and meditation before I ever start these videos. And so a lot of times what I've planned to say or planned to give is not what's necessary for somebody to, you know, to help them in their situation. And so I always leave it open to help me speak to whoever it is or whatever it is someone needs to hear tonight. So different energies as people watch this live with us. Thank you for being here and on the replay. Hopefully this will resonate somewhere in your life and for your energy. And thank you. Yep. What's up, Joe? Life is constantly about climbing a ladder, getting knocked back down again every time we get a little higher. And that's true. And that's very, very true. And sometimes it's really valuable to turn around and glance at how far you've come. Sometimes it just feels like life is just beating us up, like one thing after another, one circumstance after another. Boom, 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 boom. But it's true. Joe is right. We are still taking constant steps, and it's very valuable if sometimes we'll turn around and look how far we've come and be motivated and inspired by that. Because wherever you are, whoever you are, you're an inspiration, and you could be an inspiration to yourself. You're likely an inspiration to others and you don't even know it or realize it. Yep. Pamela says 3 steps forward, 2 steps back, slowly but surely. I was at my daughter's friend's birthday today. The little girl's mom was so, yep, so gone. Gosh, I feel for that little girl. She was there for her daughter, but totally not there. And that's true, man. There is something that happens when we are when we're so involved in our addiction that we put ourselves in these compromising positions, it really adds to that self-loathing and that shame loop that is an absolute lie, but keeps us on that wheel. For every time that we compromise ourselves we are damaging our soul. We're damaging our internal self. And so, yeah, it's true. You know, we're there in vessel. but not there in spirit. And ultimately, it just ends up hurting. It hurts everybody involved. And so it's very, very interesting to see what this next generation, you know, my son's generation is a generation where a lot of addiction was involved in the parenting, you know, and the generation even after, you know, we're seeing the results. You know, these are the young people that were raised by parents that were, a lot of us were not as present as we wanted to be because we were involved in our own hurting and heartache and we're numbing that pain. And so it's going to be interesting to see how this cycle of addiction gets broken. I'm super grateful and honored to get to witness my son, and I get to witness him every day in that I get to see that my work was worth it because he's not continuing that cycle of numbing and addiction in his life. And so it's very, very heartwarming to be able to see the results of all of the work that you put in. And so I'm so honored and grateful to be able to witness that. But it is going to be very interesting on how this next generation either continues the cycle or breaks the cycle. And so, yeah. Let's see. I'm trying to pocket money from the cards and the grandparents had to be intervening. Yeah. Yeah. It's very, 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 it's very devastating. It's a devastating disease. Addiction is a devastating disease. Not uncurable, but it is a disease still. Uh-oh, where did my... lost my little... there it is. I lost my little cursor to click on the next one. It's good to reflect, yeah, for yourself, and so good to share for others as well. I thoroughly believe this is so important. Yeah, it is. I think that we can talk about it. I think that there's a reason to be unashamed about certain things. Things especially that want to feel shameful. I like to expose and turn the light on those things the most. That's why it was important to me. I think it was, we'll get to this in year three when I really started understanding purpose. And I started understanding maybe I should share about some of this because I had the compassion that I didn't want other people to suffer as much as I had suffered just trying to change my life in these ways. And so, thank you. Yeah. Yeah, and exactly. Yeah, like, so, I mean, these kids are losing parents, you know, overdose and death is very real to this generation of children. And shout out to all of the grandparents that are having to step up and raise so many of these children. I don't think they've been given enough. I don't think we give enough to the family members of people in active addiction that have stepped up and taken on raising children and keeping life as somewhat normal and together for them. You know, there's so much we can talk about when it comes to the dynamic of families and addiction. But, you know, really and truly shout out to those who have stepped up and taken on these children, especially grandparents later in life after already having raised their children, now raising their grandchildren because they've lost a parent. That is a very hard situation to try to be in and explain because what do children do? They take on everything on themselves. They have no perspective of the bigger picture and they only see this as something that they've done or somehow they weren't good enough or, you know, whatever it is, that's just the nature of childhood and the childhood brain. And so it's a very sad position to be in, but shout out and massive, massive gratitude for those who have stepped up to raise these children because with this opioid epidemic has also become an overdose and a death epidemic. It's also become, you know, now we're in a time of fentanyl poisoning where we can't even use the word overdose because it implies intention. And so many people are just losing their lives by experimenting. So it is more valuable than ever for those of us that have any type of recovery experience to share it. I love what what Mike has together, the Sober Press, where, you know, he puts together these stories that shares people's journey and all of that in this one place to be continuously trying to offer hope and inspiration to a world that is desperate for something like this. Like, we need to know that you can bounce back from the worst possible situations. There's nobody on earth right now that is likely not going through some type of trial or tribulation. The earth is changing. Humanity is changing. The programs are changing. And we're all a witness to it. I wouldn't want to be alive any other time than right now, because it is exciting and it is scary. But the more that we reach out and share our experience and we come together in oneness, which is what we are, is really, really one. We come together with that, then we really make a difference and we can help each other shift through this. And I believe the recovery community is so valuable in this, because this is our work to do. And as we change and our light grows brighter and brighter, it changes the light in others around us. If we're trying to control situations and force people to change, or we live in judgment and we think that they have to be certain ways in order for us to love them, that's basically how we feel about ourselves. That means subconsciously we don't feel lovable. That means subconsciously we don't feel good. We don't feel right. We don't feel like we're measuring up. And so when we can share things that seem negative, but that truly have a positive, you know, a positive ending, then I hope that it inspires hope in the very, very hopeless among us. Because everybody's life is valuable. Each and every one of us are a divine version of the divine. Each one of us has this life and this light about us, regardless of what our actions are in the world. We are all expressions of the divine in human form. When we're able to see each other that way and stop leaning into that egoic need to judge and make someone wrong and make someone right and make this thing better than this, when we start to break down those programs and see each other the way we are and for who we are, the world becomes a better place. Things like drugs, substances, escapism, you know, all of that stuff is unnecessary and unneeded. It's so much less about quitting the substance as it is healing the reasons why you use it in the first place. The other naturally happens when you start to heal from within. So I appreciate everybody who's here. Thank you so much for lending your amazing energy to this tonight. Thank you for being active in the chat wherever you are. I just appreciate the ability that to sit here and be able to do this. It helps me as much as it helps. Hopefully it helps someone else. It really helps me. Helps me turn around and look at the ladder and see how far I've come as well. I'm going to tell you, year one was a shit show. At the same time, it was building some of the greatest foundations that I still stand on today. So keep going and growing. All right. I just randomly opened up the book to the Tao. I did not pick a number. And how about I just opened up to verse 39, and it's entitled Unity. Unity is the standard. When achieved, all things are harmonious. Heaven achieved it through purity. Planets achieved it through solidity. Beings achieve it through purpose. In parentheses, it has life. Generation after generation, every individual being finds their own unity, their own harmony. If heaven were to lose its purity, so too its union with the planets. If planets were to use their solidity, so too their union with beings. If beings were to lose their purpose, or their lives, without unity, all would perish and decay. The Master honors everything in every form. She knows that there is nothing between the highest and the lowest. Differentiating, we lose touch with unity. Always adjusting to find unity, the Master lets herself be lived. Constantly being renewed and shaped by Tao, rugged and full of resolve. Rugged and full of resolve. amazing. Unity. Find divinity in everything. If you start in year one with a simple gratitude practice, and you don't have to write this massive list, and you don't have to lie to yourself, if you'll spend just minutes, even once per day, connected with one thing, one human, one animal, one something, one moment that you truly connect with real gratitude that lives within you, your life and your perceptions will change. I guarantee it. Not this TikTok or Reels gratitude challenge. I'm talking about real connection with real gratitude. Watch it change. Watch your life unfold. Watch it open up for you. Be aware of how your perceptions start to shift. Because if nothing else, my perceptions of life and myself began to shift in year one, and it gave me the hope and the motivation to step into year two, still married to my purpose of being the change for my son that I wanted to see. So thank you guys so much. I appreciate you being here. I really, really do. I love all of you. Pick up all of these amazing resources, which I will hopefully, or my beautiful friend Pamela, because she's so good at it, may list in the chat somewhere or in the descriptions. I'm going to try to leave the link to all the resources that we talked about here tonight. But pick up your copy of I Didn't Come This Far, It Only Come This Far on Amazon at Pamela Topchian. Pick up The Poetry of Change there at amazon.com/poetryofchange. If you want some Sober is the New Cool gear, you can pick that up at soberisthenewcool.ca. Shout out to Kim Bellis and Sober is the New Cool. Love your mission. Love you, sis. Pick up the pocket size Tao Te Ching by Martin John at martinjohn.com. Check out Pamela Topchian's YouTube channel, where she has amazing resources like this amazing guided visualization to help relieve cravings. Utilize every single possible resource that is out there that resonates with you to help you change your life. I guarantee it, you are so worth it. And no matter where your life has been, no matter where you think your life is now, there is more. And you are absolutely worth the best possible version of yourself. So hang in there, stay with us, and let's keep going and growing. All right, y'all. Well, I'm going to get on out of here. Join me next week. Hopefully nothing comes up, but join me next week for year two. We're going to go into continued relapse, continued adulting. And we're going to visit some things like forgiveness that was life-changing in this entire process for me. So I love you guys so, so much. For the rest of this week, y'all take care. Be good to yourselves. Be good to others. And we'll see you next time. Thanks, guys. Bye.